Okay, colleagues, good evening. How are you? Thanks for the warm welcome. I've had a bit of wine, so excuse me if I'm a bit, how do I put it in?
Slap this under your ear, then you can, and then you can have this in your pocket.
Okay, good, excellent.
Thank you very much.
No, I'm not using the presentation. It's an honor to be here, as I said early on. My name is Seppo Hachigonta. I work for, as like all of us here, for the National Research Foundation Pretoria office. I'm the Director for Strategic Partnerships. What brought us here is the name Systems. But before I go to that name of Systems, for me, it's more about the connection. I mean, partnerships. So as I was coming here, I was looking beyond this topic, but how do we start connecting within the NRF and look at other opportunities that can be triggered by systems analysis, that can be triggered by other various work that we do within the organization as the NRF, regardless of the siloed approach that we sometimes follow. So I'm happy to be here. We just had a very good conversation earlier on in the afternoons where we started on with speaking of systems analysis, systems approaches, systems engineering, and then we just realized at the end, like, dude, we're speaking of the same thing. So how do we start looking at synergies in terms of systems analysis, systems engineering, and other things that we can think of? As I said earlier on, it was all about systems. So we recently had a book that we launched working with Priscilla and other colleagues. It was on systems analysis approach. So the word systems basically flashed out. And when you ask a lot of people, what is a system? Mostly what people think of is what you guys are doing at SKA here. When you speak of systems, you're speaking of computer software.
Or animals within it. Micro level, if you go down to the micro level, we speak of an economy or even zooming into one. So it's very broad in terms of the field that we're speaking of. Our interest is on the approach, the systems approach, to look at how that system interacts within itself. It can be any system, it can be a computer system, it can be an ecosystem, it can be a biological system. What methodologies can you use to identify some of the challenges or issues that come up, problems that come up within that system? If you change one variable, how does it affect other parameters? Aligned to that is what systems engineering does best, understanding the system. So how do you understand the system as it is now? But if you zoom out of the engineering, if you're in the research or in the ecosystem, you can never always understand the whole system. So there's a component of the system that you can understand wholly, but there are other issues that you might not understand, because as we know, if you talk of systems, you're speaking of complex system. So with that in mind, you speak of how do you use the past to build some of the knowledge within the system, and as well looking forwards, how do you look at these approaches to start shaping the ideas going in the future. We're speaking a lot of the fourth industrial revolution. How do you use these systematic approaches to address some of the future challenges or solutions that we might be thinking of in the future? And how do you work around, example, use software models to look at how these variables, if you change one variable, two variables, how does our system behave in a nutshell? So that's the kind of thought I want us to be in, to come out of our shell, our comfort zone, and speak broadly of a system, not just from the engineering perspective, but from the broader perspective. What does that mean? And from that system, we start looking at system engineering, system thinking, system approaches, and how we can, for instance, use examples or tools that are used in systems engineering in other sectors within the context. What that might do in the future is try to start shaping issues around systems thinking, as we are speaking in the afternoons, in terms of systems thinking from basic education, for instance. We are always siloed from the university's perspective or the schooling. Universities, it's chemistry, physics, engineering. It's not systematic. We think like that because we are taught like that, because it's always been done like that. But we need to start disrupting the way we change things. So the hope that is to use this as an experiment, to look at ways in which we can from an outreach angle, start looking at ways we can start building the capacity from a younger age in terms of thinking broadly, which is not new. It's exactly what a body, we've got legs, we've got hands, it's a body, but it has to work, it has to coordinate to work as a system. So how do we just explain that in terms of our decision making at a younger age? Say, if you're speaking of a system, it's a simple concept. Yes, you know maths, yes, you know psychology, you know, but think of it broadly. If you've got a problem, you need to think of it, most of the problems, holistically instead of thinking in silos. Young age, all the way up to universities, from the way our departments are working within the universities. And using the NRF, SKA as a national facility, it's supposed to be a national facility, so we're supposed to be speaking on behalf of South Africa. The good thing is it's a national facility which is set up by the government. Using it as a conduit to start spearheading issues around systems analysis, as an example, we can broaden up as we go forward in the future, and systems engineering as an example, what SK is doing. So we need to be in the forefront of spearheading what the national facilities is doing on national on systems analysis, as well as using it as an example when you speak of basic research. What does it mean to the community? It's not just the research that happens. There's lots of engineering that's happening. There's lots of software development that's happening. How do we communicate that to the society, which pays all of us here in terms of being the National Research Foundation and the public entity? So explaining how some of these tools are being used beyond SKA to advance some of the knowledge and societal challenges that we have. Fortunately, I've got my colleague here, Priscilla. She prepared the presentation. I don't have to talk a lot. She'll just share with you some of our investment opportunities that we've been having within the country. Towards research, but of course, we can contextualize them into the systems engineering. Priscilla.
Good evening, colleagues. Sepo, thank you very much for that overview. I want to stand where I won't be in anybody's way. I would really like to thank Apiwe and Gerard and the Inkose team for the kind invitation. I know that the catalyst for this was the book, and the book is somewhere in the audience. It's over there. So you can have a look at it, flip through it. And I'm actually quite happy to share the e-book with you, Apiwe, to share with the colleagues. I would like to start with two confessions. My first confession is that I'm not a systems analyst. I was trained as a chemist, and my PhD was in pediatric vaccine development. So it's kind of a jump to systems analysis, and I will share some of my journey on systems analysis with you. My second confession is that this presentation represents only a slice of what the book covers. And there's a lot of depth to the book, so I hope you will spend some time looking at the content of the book. It's written for a diverse audience that includes people who are not in the discipline, but who are able to understand and appreciate the value of systems thinking. And so the purpose of the presentation tonight is to provide some information, but really we would like to leave here with perhaps some ideas of how what is being done within the granting arm, the strategic partnership arm of the NRF, can be greater aligned to what's being done here at SKA. So please keep that at the back of your mind, and let's see what develops from tonight's presentation. This is the mandate of the NRF. Basically, it's to catalyze knowledge production for societal benefits, and we're quite familiar with this. I included this as a reminder to myself that actually I'm speaking to NRF colleagues because as Sepo indicated, the NRF is the SKA is part of the NRF, so we are colleagues, and that's why I'm grateful to be here tonight. Because if it wasn't for this opportunity, it would not have led to the great conversations that we have already had today. So we're very grateful for the invitation. I would journey with systems analysis from the perspective of the NRF really began through our membership with the International Institute for Applied Systems Analysis. And the history of that International Institute came from the Cold War, where really there was conflict between Russia, the US and its allies. And yet there was important science to be done. And so the Institute was established. And in spite of the Cold War going on, scientists were able to collaborate. And this institute continues to be an international institute with over 350 researchers from 50 countries, a wide alumni base of 3,500 people worldwide, over 720 institutions, and they have a Young Scientist Summer Program that has trained nearly 2,000 young scientists from 86 countries. And you can see they publish a heck of a lot. And a lot of these publications also include policy briefs. So in this context, what does systems analysis mean? It incorporates all of this. And the simple way that I understand systems analysis is that there's a common problem to be tackled, and you get many stakeholders together, so scientists, NGOs, etc., around the table, various stakeholders to tackle that problem from their perspective. And the computer software that we have available makes it possible to create a number of scenarios that also inform policy formulation. What the SDGs illustrate, all 17 of them, is that it's not possible for one scientific discipline to help us address the complex challenges that society faces. And even if you just look at the SDGs, you can see that they are not in silos themselves. There are definitely interconnections. So if you look at gender equality, that is linked to poverty. And the literature shows that when you train women, it improves poverty. It also improves health. And so it has a link to most of the SDGs that are shown here. Now, the advantage of using systems thinking to address these challenges is that it provides you with a broader context, so you can model various scenarios, as I've said, that involve policy. You can work in multiple sectors, and you also have various perspectives because you have multiple stakeholders. So from the South African perspective, we joined EASA in 2007, and the NRF is the NMO. And this partnership, so our membership is about 5 million rand a year, and it's made it possible to have scientific engagement, joint research studies, high-level engagements that include policy dialogues, hosting symposiums, and also supervising postgraduate students. And you can see from this slide that there is alignment between our national STIs. We currently have a draft white paper that's under development with EASA's research programs. There are 9 of them currently, although we are aware that EASA is working on its strategy. So EASA has been hosting since 1977, before I was born, has been hosting a Young Scientist Summer Program. This is a 3-month program that affords young scientists the opportunity to work in any of the broad areas that I showed you previously. It gives them the opportunity to work with experienced scientists, expand their networks, and also publish. And South Africa is the only country outside of the other national member organizations that has hosted a similar program outside of Austria. And so from 2012 to 2015, we hosted the Southern African Young Scientist Summer Program. And this program had Similar benefits trained 80 doctoral students from 30 countries, including 35 from South Africa, and some of them are collaborators on the book. It used a model of science in triplets. So there was a South African researcher partnering with an EASA researcher to supervise a team of students, and that team sometimes included postdoctoral fellows. And the SAYSSP, remember, was only for 3 months, has evolved now into the Southern African Systems Analysis Center, which is a consortium of 4 universities, Western Cape, Stellenbosch, Limpopo, and Wits. And it adds the added advantage of a 3-year scholarship versus a 3-month program. And then, of course, all the other value add that comes with it. And that's been very valuable. It starts off with an inception meeting, and they are also able to benefit from the book as an added resource. As part of SASAC, there are 4 pillars on which it stands. So I've mentioned the PhD program, but the PhD program also comes with capacity development interventions. So because systems analysis is so broad, it's important to introduce them to the concepts of it. And that's included in it. It also includes writing retreats. So it's really a program that's meant to be enabling to doctoral students. And then for postdocs, there's a high-level capacity strengthening program that brings in postdocs who have some data that can be enriched with systems thinking. And so they spend 3 weeks with a mentor to build that into a paper at the end of 3 weeks, and this is funded by the NRF. We recognize that there was value in developing this capacity in systems thinking, not just at the PhD level or at the postdoctoral level, but even at the honors level. So as part of SASAC, WITS has over the last 2 years been working to develop an honors module in systems analysis that was rolled out for the first time this year. So there is room for collaboration. And so I leave this slide here for you to reflect on whether there are any special projects that can be initiated in partnership with colleagues at the SKA, in collaboration with researchers at EASA, but not limited to EASA. So the collaboration can definitely be expanded to other countries where there is expertise. So please consider that. Now, I must admit that it's impossible not to enjoy my work when I work with such a great and fun bunch. So that's me. And this is David Katerere. He's one of the co-editors of the book. This is just a sampling of some of the students who have participated in these programs and some of the academic mentors. And so in some of the slides that follow, I'd just like to zoom in on one aspect of the book, specifically cities as a force for good in the environment. So the second chapter contains 4 case studies that demonstrate how cities can be a force for good in the environment. It identifies what the problem is, identifies the system, uses a range of methods to look at where the interconnections are and what lessons can be learned that could inform policy and thinking and behavior around that problem. So, and even then, of the case studies, I had initially thought of looking at city region transportation. So this is in India, energy efficient buildings in South Africa, Bloemfontein, and also solid waste management. These are very serious problems in the areas in which they occur. I decided in the interest of time to only focus on this case study because you will be able to read the others at your leisure. And the case study comes from India, the Kanyakumari district, which is in the south of India. It's an area of about 2,000 square kilometers and a population of almost 2 million. If you exclude the forest area, there are 1,627 people per square kilometer. This is the main highway that runs through this district, and there is population and vehicular pressure on this national highway, although there are secondary and tertiary roads. The reason for this is because there's actually improper road networks, insufficient secondary and tertiary roads, and poor interconnectivity between them. And so this is what it looks like. The lanes are narrow, so it's rare to have four lanes in that area. So the lanes are narrow, and there is also encroachment due to street parking, other structures, and even religious structures on the road. Bear in mind, this is a national highway. So you can see from the top pictures that it's really a problem, and congestion is very, very high. Now, we know that technology is taking us places, and there may come a time when we have a flying bus. But until then, there is a dire need for alternative solutions. So this is the methodology that went into addressing this problem. A survey was collected, statistically analyzed, and then systems dynamics modeling was used. It is rarely applied in the context of transformation in India, and it enables understanding of the influence of various subsystems. It also looks at the causal feedback and helps to plan for possible policy interventions. And so, as you can see from this, if you have investment in infrastructure and land availability, that will contribute to an improved road network. And that, in conjunction with reduced congestion, reduced travel time, will lead to enhancement in level of service. And this also then has a positive feedback loop to improve road networks. So what were some of the policy interventions? If the investment was made available and the land was also made available, it caused reduced congestion, and the level of service from the previous figure also led to travel time being reduced, carbon emissions decreasing, and a reduced cost for transformation. And because it led to higher productivity, the GDP of the area also increased. It also had a positive benefit for the environment because it decreased fuel consumption. I haven't outlined the methodology from the systems dynamics modeling, but the results demonstrated that if the policy interventions resulted in upgrades, then you had a reduction in vehicle flow volumes. And in fact, the gap between the available road networks and that required to meet the demand was reduced by 40%. Whereas if it was left as business as usual, it would actually have increased congestion by 136% by 2041. So some valuable insights that come from using this methodology. Additional benefits included a 15% increase in GDP, reduction in carbon emission by 24%, fuel consumption by 7%, and a reduction of wastage of land by over 60%. So these are some ways in which applying systems thinking can help one make positive policy choices. One of my favorite chapters in the book is chapter 17 on new approaches to measuring aging. Because although we are all mostly young, we cannot run away from aging. We can try and slow it down with good diet, exercise, Botox, but in the end, it catches up with us. And so this chapter shows that aging in South Africa is not a neutral thing, and there are a lot of nuances to it. So I would highly recommend it in the interest of time and in the desire to have engagement. I haven't gone into details in this chapter. But like I said, the book is written in a way that makes it easier to read. So if you find a chapter that's interesting, it will be very easy to read. And we also have an abstract at the beginning of each chapter that summarizes the content of the chapter. So you can skip the ones that you are not interested in. What is the future of systems analysis? This is a very open question. This picture was taken at a policy dialogue session in Stellenbosch. And so the people in the picture, that's me, are policymakers, students, researchers. And the intention was to bring everybody together to talk about, and I said this during our prior engagement, that we had challenged the doctoral students to develop a policy brief as part of their PhD. And so a dialogue session like this allows them to present that brief to real policymakers, and also to expand their networks as well. So we would be very interested to know how we can include the work, feature the work that's been done at the SKA as part of our investment in systems analysis. Thank you.
I'm going to open up for questions, discussions, comments.
Apiwe, can I say? Okay. In my negotiations with Seppo, he agreed to answer all your questions.
Yes.
Okay, so now is your time.
Okay, you know, Caleb.
Okay, I don't know. So, just to know, obviously, personally, I think systems analysis, or just general systems thinking, etc., is the way forward for solving the kind of problems that the world is facing as South Africa. So, therefore, I'm interested to know how much buy-in is there from the policymakers, basically from government and different people, into using this as tools to solve the complex problems we are facing.
Okay. To some extent, this was our previous minister's baby. Naledi Pandor had a passion for systems analysis. So basically, she encouraged us to go for the partnerships as well as the membership with EASA. So the buy-in is super high. If you look at the challenges, not even from a challenge perspective, if you look at the ideas that we need to be generating in the next 20, 30, 40 years, we need to be looking at this holistic approach of identifying the solutions and the problems that we are facing. So the buy-in is super high. But the challenge, I think, is mostly on us as a granting council and a research entity working with the universities and other knowledge producers. How do we position this systems thinking as a way forward to developing some of the solutions? And how do we communicate what we're doing? As we were discussing in the afternoons, we saw the different perspective or definitions that can just come out from systems analysis. Or just explaining what it is, what will come out from one person to the other is completely different. But in a nutshell, we mean the same thing. So how do we sell that idea beyond one minister who's so passionate about education and about systems analysis to all the ministers, to the president at that high level, to other stakeholders, if you speak of the industry, if you speak of the other non-for-profit organization, how do we speak of systems approaches to addressing the challenges and to coming up with all these innovative solutions to addressing some of the things that we have? So I think that on us, I bounce it off you and me again as NRF. What do we do to make sure that people understand what we speak of when we speak of a system and not having a linear approach to solving problems that we are faced with?
How do you manage the intellectual property in this scenario?
Hence, our intellectual property is a bit varied. From the NRF perspective, if we fund a research, then the intellectual property, of course, lies within the NRF. But if it's a bilateral, like with other bilaterals, EASA is one of the bilaterals, but and other bilaterals, intellectual property depends on what the agreement is you've agreed on between the two parties. But mostly, if from, for instance, with EASA, we do the funding. Mostly, they are there as a partner to guide us in terms of the supervision, because we know that within South Africa we've got limited supervisors to achieve our endeavors in all these fields that we mentioned. But other sectors beyond EASA, if you speak of SK partnership with Australia, some of those PI issues are addressed depending on what SKA has said on PI issues. So it's project dependent. But this project, mostly, if you speak of PIs, it's NRF dependent as well, because we do the funding. We are the main funder for the project. So it's easier. Yeah. Have I answered it? Or I'm a bit vague, like systems analysis. There's no direct answer to systems analysis. You always have to say there's no boundaries. It's too complex.
I'm just curious to know, using system analysis, what is the breakdown of sustainable cities? Like, I've always seen the time, I've always heard about it, but never. I'm sure with your guys' methodology, you're able to break it down into, you know, special components which play a specific role to it. So, just a brief overview of like what kind of findings do you find regarding system analysis on sustainable cities?
I'm going to answer by what most scientists don't do. I don't know. We didn't broadly touch on other cities. So it was a case study from India. So there's no comparison from the global perspective.
Can I comment on that?
Yeah.
So when it comes to sustainable cities, it's important to define your system. And so in the case that I explained, the system was a transportation system. But it could very well be the waste management system. And you could see there were clear environmental benefits in the example from India. And so in the context of sustainable cities, we recognize that although the city is the supra system, you can break it down into subsystems. And so what tends to happen with research is that a subsystem gets identified that's part of the supra system. And then the research is targeted to that and then looks at the causal loops linked to that system, etc.
Thank you, Priscilla. At least somebody knew what I didn't know. Yes, please.
Firstly, I must say I really enjoy that example that you gave. And the joy for me in systems engineering has always been in systems thinking, how everything is about systems. And when I was system engineer, the same principles you use to design a fleet management or vehicle packing system, you can also apply to build the team that develops that system. And you can follow the same principles to analyze the whole greater group of stakeholders. So it makes good sense that you take the principles of systems analysis and you can apply those broadly to all the different systems inside the city. So I have two questions. The first one is, what was your experience around working with universities? I haven't looked at it in a while, but when I studied, for example, systems engineering was on no university curriculum. And even recently, when we started this chapter in our interaction with universities, a lot of them didn't really get the systems thinking concept. They were more concerned with how do we train people so that I can get some sort of a job that I've actually heard of before. So for me, that has always been a great gap, because if you think about systems thinking, I think, who was it? Gerard, I think, that said the sort of problems that we're sitting with. We've managed, you know, we know how to build a Boeing 747. It's complex, but there's lots of components, but we can do that. But add a few thousand or million people to the equation, and then you have a really interesting problem. So So firstly, what's your feedback in terms of the universities? And then secondly, since you're talking at an INCOSI event, the International Council on Systems Engineering that has really been focusing on how do you apply systems thinking, what is sort of your interaction with INCOSI and your experience of working with them?
Can I start? And yes. So on the last one, the INCOSI one, this is the first interaction we've had. As I said earlier on, within the NRF, there's a lot of siloed approach. And it's good that our new CEO, not new anymore, our CEO is pushing for this single NRF, speaking in terms of values and what we do. And I think this is one of the good opportunities when you speak of interactions going forward. So we hope it will grow beyond what we have had today and looking at other opportunities. It's not the only membership that we adhere to. There's 50-plus membership that NRF pays within the international sphere because we believe that if you want to do excellent research, you can't do it in isolation. You have to follow the model of SKA where it's a global world and internationalization is one of the key priorities of the NRF. That being said as well, the focus on Africa is quite huge at the moment. So like with SKA, we need to put that opportunity and leverage on some of the interactions within the continent that we are working on. Interactions with the universities and systems analysis, Priscilla will add a bit more on that. I think that's, even from this project, that's one of the challenges that we've had. If you go to university and speak of systems analysis, then they don't know what you're speaking of. What systems analysis? Even if it's as simple as it can get, but we speak different languages. So from that component, it's a bit vague, and that's the challenges that we've had. The last 3 years, when it changed from the SAYSSP that Priscilla mentioned in 2014 to the SASAC model, mostly what we do is there's a call that goes out, and we identify institutions to do all the running around and to facilitate the program for 3 years or so. When it left YSSPSA to SASAC, there was a call that went out, open for 2 months, no application. People didn't know what was systems analysis or what we meant. We go back to the universities, we had to go this road trip to say systems analysis is basically, you know, simplified. It's anything, but it has to be connected and ABCD, the definitions. And we had one application, extended the call again, still one application. So it's a major challenge within universities because there's no understanding in terms of what do you mean by systems analysis, as well as the mentality of our system where the university is silos, as we were discussing earlier on with Roger, where there's no qualifications on systems analysis within the university, within the whole country. And so how do you present that as a way of doing things? Our approach now is now to focus more on the research and the capacity development at PhD level or master's level, because that's the flexibility. You're using an approach. You might be doing economics or astronomy, but your approach is on systems analysis. So yes, it's astronomy, but you're looking at different sectors. And your PhD, yes, it will be given a certificate on astronomy, but what you've done within your PhD, you said you use the multidisciplinary approach towards addressing whatever challenge you are addressing within your PhD. So that's the kind of thinking that we are going towards. Priscilla, do you have any more on that?
I would add that I'm optimistic about the engagement with universities. And we have an advisory group as the NMO that advises on the decisions we make on our investment in systems analysis. And we realize that there's a lot of interdisciplinary research that's happening that has all the components that one would use to define systems analysis, but maybe they just don't call it that. Mm-hmm. And so our intention is to try and look at where this research is happening in the country and to almost network the networks and create more coordination in the system and synergy in the system. I even understand that there's a conference on systems analysis that's happening sometime this year. So it seems as if there are pockets of networks in the country, and we need to look at how we can better connect those networks.
Yes.
I had a chat with Thomas And he told me about the Inkosi conference that's happening in October at the CSIR. It's literally across the road, so we will be popping in there. But we would like to be kept in the loop about the work that Inkosi is doing so that we can facilitate your link to other networks that we are aware of.
Yeah, and in addition to that as well is the speaking, as I say, that we're speaking of one NRF. When we speak of one NRF, what does it mean? The values, as well as how do we use examples on systems engineering from the SK perspective, from the national perspective. We are speaking of a national facility. How do we use that example to say, this is what we are doing in South Africa, building all these SK-related facilities and equipment, and how it can be applied even outside that sphere towards other issues that we are faced with. We're speaking of big data. You speak of big data, you speak of SK in the world at the moment. The data that we have now, we don't have the processor power or the intellectual ability to do the analysis now. What does it mean? How do we translate it to society? How do we translate it to policymakers? How do we translate it to the private sector and a common man who's supposed to understand all these billions of rands that we've spent in SKA? So it's that opportunity as well. I think that's what the value of this meeting is as well, to say, how do we move beyond what it's been to coming up with a small core group, but whatever we are doing, it can be of higher impact within the organization and broadly within the country going forward.
Maybe just more a comment than a question, but I'm just wondering with regards to the education part, you know, whether maybe it's not, it is maybe a good thing that the current approach that you have, because I'm not sure whether, you know, if there is something like a department of systems thinking or a department of systems engineering in a university, whether you can get a degree in systems engineering or systems analysis, whether that really makes sense, because in that way you just create another silo, really. You almost need something that is totally different way of doing things. It needs to be sort of rather crosswise connected to all the different parts of disciplines that you hold. It's like almost an additional course that you just take with your
I agree with you. Because now, if, for example, there's lots of talk in terms of the model of funding, if you're granting council like the NRF, what impact are you having, or what's the impact of our research? So there's lots of those discussion happening to say, if you are a funder, within your instruments that you're using for funding, what type of indicators are you using to measure that impact? And one of the ways of doing that is looking at this holistic approach to say it's not siloed, but it's looking at this multidisciplinary, it's more of driven by the outcomes or outcome-based research. So it's not just research, but at the end of the day, you can talk of potential impact of that research that you're doing within the holistic picture. But changing how universities work, it will take time, or because they're used to doing things the way they're doing. But the benefit of the NRF is we can start influencing those things to say there are opportunities. If you're doing courses in systems analysis like VITS has done, the NRF can facilitate some of those processes through funding, through the international partnerships that we bring in. So there's lots of discussion, but for me it's about what opportunities do we create internally that we can showcase outside. It won't work if within the NRF it's still disjointed. If you speak of NRF, there's NRF RISA office, there's SKA, there's Scion. We speak differently. So we need to think of how do we speak holistically as one institution in terms of living our values and our culture, and then speaking of how do we influence the whole system, the universities and et cetera, through systems analysis. So we don't have one solution that will fit all, but it starts with these small projects, experiment. If it works, upscale. That's my view here. Yes, sir. Oh, yes, and we'll go through you later on.
Yeah, no, thanks very much for the presentation. I've kind of got two questions around systems analysis, probably more specifically. My understanding is that there's quite a challenge involved in trying to find a model to analyze a particular system that is sufficient. I've seen quite a few models where a lot of things get left out, and then the result is kind of nonsensical.
Mm.
So my first question is, getting a clean analysis is fairly accurate in terms of what is out there in the world.
Mm.
And then my second question is, that in your research, has an analysis ever revealed a solution that is completely counterintuitive? So in other words, you're analyzing a particular problem, traffic or transport, and through the analysis suddenly realize that there's a completely off-the-wall approach that will actually provide a solution that will the system variables to solve the problem.
Mm. That's a tough question, the last one. Priscilla, you answer the last one. I'll answer. Can you start with the last one? Anything on the book?
So there's a lot that has been written, and one of the things I appreciate about EASA is that they don't have a retirement age. So as long as you have the power, you can continue to work. And they have a lot of Nobel laureates that have been grappling with these issues. So there's a lot of literature on methodology that's been used in the context of applied systems analysis. But to your point, I appreciate the concept of a wicked problem. Do you know what that is?
Mm-hmm.
It's a problem that's complex but does not have a solution. And I found that fascinating. And so you're absolutely right. There are problems that have been identified as having no solutions, and so trying to solve them will be not helpful.
Yeah.
But to your point about the methodology, generally there are limitations to the models that are used. But the rule of thumb is, if you can get multiple perspectives, the more perspectives you get, the better the solution starts to look. And so the book also has case studies on participatory governance. So it provides experiences of, say, green energy projects that have been run that had a top-down approach. So the community will receive windmills. And how was that received in the community, even though there was a sense that this is good for the environment? The consensus in the community was this was not our idea for this project, and so there isn't buy-in, and so good projects can die in the absence of participatory governance. That's my two cents.
Thanks, Priscilla. And just to add on that component. My take on that as well, the first question, if you speak of a system and if it's broad, like you're speaking of this macro system, the global system, you don't necessarily have to know all the components on how they work, on how the system works. Classic example is issues around climate change. We need to understand the system, and a lot of modeling has been done with regards to that. However, how do we communicate that 2%, 10% that we don't know? It's because it's all interconnected. So the most of the modeling, yes, it's done, but it's how these systems work together. And if you change certain variables, knowing those big things like, okay, we know now, like this anthropogenic changes, too much pollution, that will affect temperature. However, within that sphere, we know that there are other variables that still affect temperature. There's volcanoes, there's radiation from the sun, and etc. How do you explain some of those elements to the community as well? So it's more of a concept of democracy to some extent, which is not perfect. We say the majority, if most scientists, 80, 70% are saying there's climate change, but do we ignore the other 10%? If not, do we justify to say, yes, the majority of the body of science says, 90% says, this is what's happening, we've done our modeling, justify the other side of the story. So yes, it's about explaining the models and the limitations of what we know within that system, clearly to say, we know this and we don't know that. From what we know, we can make predictions on what will happen in the future. I think that's what mostly scientists who are towards climate change explain, but the other side of it, they won't explain to say there is no climate change and there's no that validation. So understanding the system is very critical. I think that's why if you speak of systems engineering, the details that goes in systems engineering, that's where we can start using these, some of these experiments, some of these experience on how you need to get a system as perfect as possible before you speak of how all these parameters within it interact and change, and you can use them to advise other stakeholders, government or society, as well as prediction in the future. So there's lots of synergies and learnings to be done. But the science will never be perfect. For me, as a scientist, if I'm speaking or if I hear somebody saying, this is 100% of what I'm doing, I always scratch my head. Like, science can never be 100%. There's always that 2% that you don't know. Now, do you explain it? Just, if you don't know yet, say yes, the body of science didn't yet understand it, but the majority we understand it, and this is how we are viewing it going in the future. Sorry for that unwinded answer. We don't have a direct question answer to you.
Part of my question has been answered, but I just wanted to find out as to looking at the cases that you have studied, for example, one of India, do you make inferences that the situation that or the outcomes of India, basically what you've studied, the lesson learned can be transferable to the cases in South Africa? Because I truly believe that the two scenarios are completely different, and obviously they've been informed by, you know, there have been a behavior over time that actually made the two scenarios completely different. So I just wanted to find out as to, when looking at all these scenarios, do you make those inferences that whatever that is there then could also be applicable to our situation in South Africa?
If not, no. Short answer is no. The whole idea of a case study is you're looking at that environment, that the India environment and the parameters around the India environment. But the whole idea with experimentation is to try and look at, if you're using that model, okay, one, you're using some of the methodologies you're using, and there's uncertainty, of course. There's always possibility of using that same methodology to another case. So there's always a learning perspective. If you look at India, the traffic in India is almost closer to Johannesburg. Okay, so how do you start looking at what happens in India to inform your decision, even if you're not in India, to say this is what was done in India, they've got lots of traffic ABCD, which we have in South Africa. Can we learn something from India if they're coming up with solutions that work using that system's perspective and bring them to South Africa, not as is, but use some of the model and tailor it to our environment? So we have to tweak it. The methodology, we tweak it. The population, we tweak, and we look at how can we use some of that learning. Otherwise, we can't always start from the start, from scratch. There's so many things that are done around the world. India case, transport is one case. But if you look at so many cases or so many challenges that we have, most of these things we can learn from different parts of the world, spatially, as well as it's not just within the spatial case. If you look at the themes space, if you speak of engineering, socioeconomics, there are so many models that are used in these different themes. Some of those models can be transferred from one model to the other theme. How do you learn? But how do you tailor it to address what you want to address? So India case, yes, it might be completely different, but we can learn from it. And some of the methodologies, we can apply them here. Yeah.
I would just add that in order for research to inform policy and practice, it's important that it be relevant. And when it comes to applying systems thinking, there's decision-making under uncertainty, and some of this comes out through the research, but there's also decision-making under contradictory certainties. So one of the chapters in the book on energy looks at the policy environment for energy in South Africa and some of the contradictions in the country's own energy policies and how to navigate that when it comes to decision-making. But it does have to be relevant to the context you are in so that it can inform decision making.
And I'm glad that there's the energy report that came out. Is it yesterday? If you looked at some of the issues that are coming out, that's a classical dynamic of systems approaches as well, looking at these different sectors and how they can contribute towards this inclusive energy sector in South Africa.
Do you know of any analysis that's being done with regards to the implementation of the NHI?
The National Health, no, we didn't do that. No, we didn't do that.
Looking at a way that it can be implemented, that makes sense. But that seems like something that's...
No, what we looked at was HIV in specific, which is part of the health sector. But we didn't look at the NHI in the way it is now. There's lots of politics happening within that. And there's a lot of players as well as within that. So as well, if you look at NHI, it's a classic example as well of systems dynamics. If you look at the players there, there's the private sector who, of course, are protecting, and there's the public sector which is saying everyone should have access to the health sector. But looking at the variables, looking at the players that are involved in, and at the end of the day, it's about access to the healthcare. So there's lots of contradictory statements on that one. I'm not sure what the delays are, but it's as well as to do with the budget constraints of the government, if you look at it at the moment, and issues that came up with FISMAS 4, where things have to move around to facilitate one area of the government priorities, and one of the areas will definitely suffer. One classic example is the healthcare.
Like interesting problems.
Yes. So for me, the whole idea is to try and look at the methodologies. It might be systems engineering. If it's making sense within that sphere, can it be applied to other sectors? It might be health, it might be agriculture or anything else. But how do we use some of these methodologies? We adapt them to understand that system and say, this is our proposed potential solutions going forward. It's a bit radical, but maybe it will happen. From SKA perspective, Any more questions or comments or ways forward apart from questions?
Roger and Renee? I thought you were going to comment on something. Do you have any more questions, comments, contributions, collaborations?
Yes. Collaborations within the NRF. We need to start with this group, at least a small group, and then we show like this is how we're working. It's not just the administrative office, as you are called, Priscilla, there, and the SKA, but collaboratively, how do we come up with these experimentations? And for me, it's always the idea of, if we're speaking of the national facility, how do we upscale and increase the voice of the national facility? If it's SKA, how do we make sure that society understands what we are doing within SKA? And how do we convince them, like, what we're doing, that's value from, that's public money within South Africa. It's a lot of money within our fiscal budget. How do we start making people understand or use SKA as an example of, when you say basic research investments, SK, classic example of how this research is translating, not now, not directly, not indirectly, into societal benefit in the wrong term, or just other opportunities that come within the basic research opportunities.
I'd like to say thank you to Priscilla and Seppo. So, Gerard and I received an email, well, I think everyone at SK received an email from the NRF about the publication of the book. And Gerard and I sent each other emails and we're like, how come we don't know about these people? I wonder if anyone knows about them within the inclusive environment, because we're like, this is analysis and systems engineering, but we've never heard anything. So we said, let's make contact and let's see if we can work out something. And thank you very much to Priscilla and Seppo, because when we started talking to them, they were so interested and followed up with us, and so we have a little token.
I'm going to take a photo, and you can
Ah, hopefully thank you. Is it wine? Well, we've got a
it's
nice
good
evening.
Wine. Let's Priscilla,
we are sleeping here.
Take it with the Entosis banner. Make me look tall, hey?
Yeah, sure. You have a box?
Okay, great. Thanks, guys.
Okay, thank you so
much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
This is so unexpected.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much.
And then, thank you to our audience for tonight. Thank you very much for coming through. Thank you, Khaira, who actually assisted me with organizing the event. And also, I must say, this room is actually a meeting room, so it's not an auditorium. So it took a bit of manpower to organize it in this manner. So I'd like to thank